Hello and welcome to the Veeam Community Podcast. I'm your host, Rick Vanover. This is episode 73, Big Data in Little Places. Here we go. Today, my guest is Vanessa Alvarez. How you doing, Vanessa?
I'm doing well, Rick, and you?
I'm awesome, and I'm so happy that we're able to talk about this topic. Big data, little places, you've got a lot of experience with that. And me and my role, I keep finding people with little pockets of big data, and they're not the companies you think of. So you know a lot about big data and big stuff. What can you tell us about yourself?
So I have been in the industry for about a little over 8 years now. I have been in the analyst role throughout that time. I have a long trajectory coming from the Yankee Group and Frost & Sullivan, and most recently Forrester Research. I'm an independent analyst today looking at the emerging world of big data, because even though it's probably the second most hyped term today, it still is, in fact, in its infancy, and I think there's a ton of exciting things going on. I think there's so many new and exciting startups in this space that are really changing the way that that data is going to be managed and stored and processed and analyzed at the end of the day. And so I'm pretty excited about being able to cover this space and delve into it.
Cool. Because I know, you know, you and I have been bumping into each other at VMworlds and Twitters and whatevers. And, you know, big data is really one of the topics of the month, of the year, or whatever. Yeah. But, you know, a lot of times people think that big data is an enterprise thing. And, you know, you and I were talking via email, and I came to this revelation, and I'm really curious to your opinion, that, you know, some people kind of fall into a big data situation with, like, things like email, right? You know, people that never delete anything, even small companies, you know, people, especially if they're in media, right, when they're emailing big files and stuff. Do you see big data happen even in the little players, little companies?
Absolutely. I mean, I think you're right. At the enterprise level, they have been facing this challenge for quite some time now. I think that, you know, in the past, they've had to deal with a ton of data, but more so from a traditional type of data. So, you know, when we look at transactional data, for example, that's kind of been within the enterprise space for a long time. And so the reality of that kind of data is that it is growing even more so today. However, enterprises are experiencing not only that kind of data, but also the growth of unstructured data, right? Today you have so many different formats. You have video, you have HTTP, and a ton of other kinds of data. And so that really is a struggle for large enterprises, right? Because it's such an explosive growth. But, you know, I think big data is really a misrepresentation of what this problem really is, because I've spoken to many, you know, businesses in the past, both large and small, large enterprises and small and mid-sized enterprises and SMBs, and, you know, they identify their problem as a big data issue, and in a large enterprise that consists of 1 petabyte plus of data, right? Whoa. And at the same time, when it's a mid-sized enterprise or SMB, their big data issue is, you know, perhaps 400 terabytes or 200 terabytes of data. The reality is that, you know, it's all relative to the size of the business. So it doesn't, in my opinion, it doesn't really need to be big data. It can be any data, right?
Yeah, it could be messy data.
Exactly, right? I mean, and if you look at the survey data out there today that I've, you know, worked with and I've seen most recently, the reality is that a lot of organizations are considering the big data issues really the internal data that they're sitting on, right? Data coming from CRM systems, coming from, you know, their websites and so on and so forth. So today, that's really a big bulk of what they're using. Some of these newer big data technologies like Hadoop, for example. However, I do see that changing going forward and very quickly as they start to grasp these newer concepts and understand that the value is really going to come from using these types of, you know, techniques when they start to bring in, you know, unstructured data and be able to analyze all of their data together, right? Because let's face it, at the end of the day, a business user, and really analytics is at the business level, doesn't really care whether it's structured, unstructured, whether it's big or it's small. All they really want to do is extract the value of that data at the end of the day.
You know, it's funny you say that because you got a couple of things running in my head. First was I used to work at a financial services bank type of organization, and we had this one, you know, my closest experience to big data was this thing that would scan checks, you know, from a payment center as they would be, you know, people would pay their bill and a check would come in. Well, that was, you know, a huge mess because it was like front and back of the check, so JPEG driven, like let's just say 100K per transaction. 100 KB per transaction. They were really pushing online payments because you only have a text string of a confirmation token, right? So you go from 100 KB per transaction to maybe one or two, you know, as a database record, way more structured, right? So sometimes some of your business processes come into play, and I've kind of like, you know, changed the names and faces to protect, you know, my prior identity. But, you know, it's one of those things that business processes actually can drive a huge change over scale as the way data is manifested. And I think, you know, that's my example where, you know, the business process makes a big difference in how, you know, how the footprint of these apps and these data come into play. Because really, we don't really care about terabytes and gigabytes. We care about apps working, money flowing. You know, that's the kind of stuff that people really care about.
Exactly.
And another funny thing, Hadoop. I think I read somewhere that for every one person that has Hadoop experience, I think there's like five jobs to choose from. Is that about right? Have you seen something like that?
Absolutely. I mean, it's you know, the amount of skill set is just not there, right, to meet the demand. And it's a challenge today for a lot of companies. And quite frankly, I mean, I've spoken to companies, in, particularly in the mid-size and SMB segment, that are looking for, you know, highly automated systems that can help them to be able to leverage these kinds of techniques, right, but not have to have the skill set in place. And so that's where I think, you know, we're going to start to see a lot of innovation and a lot of change. We've already started to see some of that happen, right, where you have appliance solutions that are highly automated and have and are able to, you know, store process and analyze the data.
Yeah, I think in the process part of it's really important. I know that when I look at what people decide, you know, a lot of times people get kind of stuck in a decision that kind of over the long term throws them into a loop, and you know, I kind of get into them for like, well, how the heck are you going to back this up, or how the heck can you ensure that, you know, you can move it, you know, even at the storage level. Actually, I was talking, you probably know Chris Evans, right, the storage architect in the UK?
Yes.
Him and I were talking one time, and he's like, man, it's just too much data, I can't move it off, right? I mean, it was like he was doing some, like, some calculations, and he can move X amount of terabytes out of this system every week or something like that, and it's like, we'll never get done. You know, so once you get some of these holes, I don't know what the answer is, but it's plan ahead is the answer, I guess.
Well, absolutely. And, you know, I think one of the things that this has definitely highlighted, you know, the data explosion growth has highlighted, is the fact that traditional storage architecture, the traditional infrastructure in general, is not cut out for this kind of processing, right? I mean, when you start to think about the tons of data that's being, you know, stored, is it really cost-effective or cost-efficient to do that in your traditional SAN architecture? It's probably not, right? But that's what most companies today have in place. You know, is your network, you know, up to stuff in being able to handle all of this data moving back and forth, right? That's a lot of bandwidth, a lot of CPU, a lot of processing power, right? In your servers and your network and your storage. And, you know, those three areas have traditionally been siloed in the past. And I think, you know, the emergence of virtualization and cloud probably brought those areas together, somewhat, but I think the fact that in today, those areas really need to come much more together and be much more aligned and are highly interdependent on one another, is definitely highlighted in the big data ecosystem. And so I think that, you know, you definitely have to start to look at how your storage architectures change, how your server processing power changes, you know, how your network needs to be designed and architected to be able to support some of the, some of these newer techniques coming down the pipeline of analytics. And I'm not necessarily talking just about Hadoop, right? Because at the end of the day, Hadoop is really not real time. Mm-hmm. Right? It's batch processing. So I start to think, you know, much more in the future, and start to think about when companies want to start leveraging real-time analytics, right? Mm-hmm. And now you're like needing all of that processing power, all of that storage, all of that, you know, bandwidth on demand, right? And it's very, very flexible. Very, you know, it changes really fast. And so how do you design your infrastructure environment to be able to support that kind of, you know, those kind of analytics?
And I think we'll see, and this is my own personal crystal ball, but we'll see like the likes of Oracle and Microsoft and, you know, other big, you know, household names in the data center come out with solutions, enterprise-ready solutions that will, you know, kind of like be that commercial enterprise equivalent of the open source movement, right? So that they'll, you know, be something that might make it easier to adopt, right? I think we might see that kind of stuff pop in there. Cause it might even be delivered from the storage companies, right? Maybe, you know, the storage, those mainstay, you know, household names of the storage companies might, you know, change the game a little bit and bring some of those types of analytic tools that, you know, go right into the storage. You know, who knows? There's a great opportunity, but, it's kind of a weird time right now, I think.
It is. It's a big shift, right? I mean, in the past year, I spoke, you know, at Hadoop World last year, and, you know, it was very much an audience who has leveraged commodity infrastructure for a long time in their own big data environments, right, web-scale companies. And, you know, we kind of know the usual suspects in that, you know, space who manage their infrastructure much more differently than a traditional enterprises and mid-sized companies. But, you know, I think that there's a fundamental shift going on in how infrastructure is going to be deployed, right, and what kind of infrastructure to be able to support these kind of environments. And, yes, I do think that some of the traditional household names within the infrastructure space are going to come to market, but I also think that there's an exciting space right now where there's emerging startups coming into play that are really changing the way that, you know, the network is managed and storage is deployed, and, you know, servers are, you know, becoming much more powerful. And so, you know, that's the part that I love about this industry. It's that, you know, you have traditional players and you have emerging startups, and they just all kind of come together to be able to fill those gaps, you know, within portfolios and be able to create innovation. I mean, it's very difficult in this day and age for large vendors to do some of their own innovation and organic growth, right? Today, it's funny, I said the other day, the new M&A is the new R&D, right? So, you know, it's just the evolution of the competitive landscape, right? Large vendors acquire emerging startups who bring that innovation into their portfolio.
That's a good point. The innovation, it almost feels like it is a revolving wave of innovation. And based on, you know, the circles I play in, right, you know, we had a huge innovation on the core infrastructure with virtualization. And, I mean, yeah, that's still important, but the fundamental innovation level is not really happening right now. It's happening for me in my circles and, you know, storage, especially non-rotational storage. So I've got this huge wave of innovation playing right there. Then I think, you know, look into these big data topics, we'll see some huge innovations in like data management and some like base, you know, software things that move data around and do stuff with data analytics, for example. Yeah, I do appreciate this, you know, frequent, revolution of innovation, and there's never a quiet moment. And right, you know, then, you know, software defined networking is going to come into play, and networking is going to get a new burst of innovation. It's, they're all kind of going, and it's probably good that they're all not going at the high peak of innovation at the same time, because then I don't have the brain power to keep up with it at that point.
You're right. And I think that innovation just comes, you know, it's forced, right? I think companies are forced to innovate because these new business requirements and business initiatives are really driving that change, right? Companies want to be able to analyze tons of data more frequently, you know, and the reality is that the infrastructure in place doesn't support that, and so it forces change, and I love that, right?
Yeah.
Otherwise, you know, it wouldn't be as exciting.
No, it's definitely a good point. It has to be exciting, because when it's not, I tell you, I get bored. I get bored really quick, and it's not fun at that point.
And the good thing is that there's, you know, a ton of innovation happening in the infrastructure space, right? I mean, I think that, you know, the infrastructure is where the magic happens, right? If you don't have that in place, and you, if you don't have the right infrastructure in place, it doesn't work, right?
Right.
You know, everything else suffers. And so, you know, I think that's really key. And, it's one of the things that I highlighted in my research. It's really, yes, big data, analytics, you know, everything at the you know, top layer is important, but you also need to be able to have the right infrastructure in place to be able to support that environment. Otherwise, it's not going anywhere.
And my boss has said something a number of times, because there's another wave of innovation around cloud technologies, right? And he has always told me, this is Doug Hazelman's always said, the cloud has infrastructure too, and it can't be ignored. Right, he's always told me that, and it's so true, because it's underneath the hood, right? It's underneath the cloud. It's got to run on something. There's still stuff in play.
Absolutely, it's just a matter of where that stuff is, right? Yeah. Whether it's on premise or whether it's in a service provider's environment, but it's still there.
Yep.
It's not going anywhere.
Awesome. So now I'm going to transition to the gimmick of my podcast, Vanessa. And lucky you, I even warned you about it. So you're mostly prepared. So
yeah.
I'm going to ask you three questions, one from the past, one from the into the future, and one set into the present. I'm going to start with the past. So, Vanessa, can you share with us any, professional tech-related experience from your past that kind of is the most, interesting story you can tell from anything you've done?
You know, I think, as I mentioned earlier, I have been in the analyst space in tech for a little over 8 years, and I have to say that probably the most exciting thing that I have gone through was when server virtualization started to emerge, right? And I was just about starting in my career, and I was covering the network, right? So I have a networking background. And I thought, wow, this is pretty crazy, right? I thought it was so cool and so exciting what server virtualization was going to do to the server, and which is kind of when I started to look at the server, and then, you know, I moved on to storage. But it was that, at that point where I knew I wanted to be in technology, and seeing that change just excited me even more.
Yeah, that was the most interesting thing I had seen in my career to that point. You know, it set the bar. Yeah, definitely agree 100%. How about right now? You know, what specific segment of technology in general do you have the most interest and the most passion in?
I have to say, I think a lot of people think that the storage space is boring, but I think it's actually pretty exciting what's happening right now in storage. I think that some of the players like Amazon and like Google have really changed the way that storage is viewed and the way that storage is deployed, and And I think that when I look at this space, big data, and I think cloud also would relate to cloud as well, it forces storage architectures to change, and that sort of commodity infrastructure approach that, you know, we've seen in some of the web scale companies is really starting to emerge within traditional enterprises, right? Mm-hmm. I can't tell you how many times I had client calls where they're asking me, how does Amazon do it? How does Google do it? I think there's a growing interest in moving towards that kind of approach. And today, I think it's about helping those businesses get from point A to point B, right?
Yeah.
And we may not ever be entirely at point B, but I think in some instances and for some workloads, it may be much more efficient to be able to manage a kind of commodity infrastructure environment. And you know, that's really what I'm starting to see and what's getting me excited, because it changes. You know, there's a lot of emerging vendors in the storage space that are kind of changing the way that storage is deployed today. There's, you know, vendors like GridStore and Scale.NAS. There's, you know, Nutanix, who, you know, who compute and storage together. So, you know, those kind of concepts for me are really changing the way that storage is managed and deployed today. And I think that it's real, those concepts are really geared towards in big data environments, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, large scale server virtualization environments. So,
yeah. I think I love that question. How does Amazon do it? Because I was, every now and then I get, you know, stuck at the bar having conversations and then just keep talking. And I think of some amazing things when I need to. But what I said to somebody, they were like trying to heckle the idea of cloud. They were a cloud hater, okay? And I said, dude, Amazon is the best example of full abstraction from your infrastructure to your apps and everything, because you have no clue what's going on. They have it so well, you know, that barrier so well separated. I think it's a great model, but, man, it's big and complex. I wouldn't want it. But, you know, if you need that type of environment, it could be cool. How about into the future, Vanessa? What's kind of your, you know, longer term, maybe even beyond the things that we have, like, identified today? What do you see as the most interesting thing into the future?
You know, I think when I look at where businesses are going, where and where they should be going, I think today it is about understanding what kind of technology and what kind of infrastructure you have, and so on and so forth. And you know, even though we always tell our clients, you know, I tell my clients anyway, it doesn't really matter what kind of hardware your cloud service provider uses, or you know, what kind of technologies they're using. Focus on what your core business is. We still see a lot of that. I evaluated many cloud service provider RFPs, and 3 out of 5 pages were focused on technology. Right. Mm-hmm. I think as we move into the future and companies start to feel much more comfortable with cloud, I think that we'll start to see much more stay in the cloud, right, in terms of businesses' workloads and, you know, the applications and their services are going to be leveraged from cloud service providers, right? And I think that in my vision, I see a grid-like cloud, right, where you can move workloads from cloud service provider to cloud service provider without any issues. And that, in fact, maybe those cloud service providers will have some kind of agreement in place or some kind of contract where, you know, they say, if we need to fail over to your data center, right, because we have an issue, then, you know, we'll have the right security and policies in place with our data to do so, but, you know, we'll be able to leverage your data center instead of having your own, right? Let's face it, there's only so many data centers that you can build before you run out of space, right? It's going to be a matter of now all those cloud service providers being able to share their own resources, right? And, you know, that's kind of what I think, you know, what I think will happen. And, you know, we'll see in 10 years, right?
Yeah. Well, I think it becomes a huge platform issue, right? You know, there's a few religious issues out there, right? Is it Linux or Windows? Is it, you know, this brand of storage, that brand of storage, you know, this cloud technology, that technology, you know, that might be the next one in that list. That's an excellent prediction. And honestly, if you had those models in the cloud, man, it makes it a lot more attractive, really. That's good stuff. Well, hey, we're going to wrap it up. Vanessa, you're on Twitter at VanessaAlvarez1, and I'll put notes to that in the podcast page. And I really, really appreciate you being on the podcast. You're welcome back anytime.
Awesome. Thank you so much for having me.